This week on It's So Bad, the human race fucks up again! We're talking about Halo on It's So Bad. Welcome. We have a big roster of co-hosts this week. Whenever you're listening, evening, morning, night, afternoon. We have Steve. Hello.
Hello, Mike.
We have Matt Z, the original Matt.
Hi, Mike. It's good to be back.
We have Chris. Michael, hello. Christopher. Hello. And we have new Matt. Unlike new Pepsi. He's delicious.
Oh, thank you, Michael.
Hello, new Matt.
Hello.
And so this week on the podcast, we are adding the game called Halo. You could subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, wherever you find your podcast. We are adding Halo to the endless list of video games. It currently goes from Super Mario 64 all the way down to number 84, Jurassic Park Trespasser. And yes, we have Halo this week.
Just to clarify, it's Halo Combat Evolved, right?
Yes, Halo Combat Evolved. Is there another Halo? Just Halo?
There isn't. I was reading, they threw that in there because the marketing people didn't think that Halo was like action shootery enough, so they wanted people to know that you'd be doing some evolved combat.
I read that as well. It was what a way to shoehorn combat into the title.
All right, so we're adding Halo Combat Evolved. I got it. does anybody... I guess they call it Halo CE, right? That's how people would normally address it?
Yeah, that's right.
So what's... Steve, you, I think, have probably one of the most prolific histories with this game. When did you originally get Halo?
So I'll start for when I originally played Halo, because I go over to my cousin's house, or at least I did. They've since moved, but every Christmas they would have people over, and one year my cousin got Halo, and he had just gotten an Xbox too, and I played it, and it blew my mind. I was like, 12 years old, 11 years old at the time, and it was like no game I had ever played before, and I was like, oh, I need to get an Xbox. So then I think I got it a couple of months after that, maybe like a month or two after that, and since then I've probably played this game at least 10 times through. I've done co-op mode with friends. Like, this was the game growing up, like at a sleepover or birthday party, like we would just do co-op, we would do multiplayer. So I've played this game a lot.
And so this is, I mean, your first system was like the N64, right?
I owned PlayStation originally, and then I sold it to get an N64.
Okay.
After like a year or two, because I think I got PlayStation right when it came out, so there weren't a ton of games. And I was kind of like, and then I played some 64 games, and that was when I really got into gaming.
Got it. And new Matt, the other Matt.
Yes.
Matt 2.0. You also have a rather prolific history with this game. Did you have the original Xbox when it came out?
I did. It's very random. I was walking through the mall one day with some friends, and I saw at Sam Goody that they were releasing a new...
Sam Goody?
Yes. Oh, yes. That they were releasing a new system called Xbox. And like, I heard something about it, but... it was up for pre-order, and I pre-ordered that, and it came with Halo, Tony Hawk 2X, Project Gotham Racing, and I think NFL Fever. So I got to play Halo like pretty much upon release day. And I remember like at first I was blown away by it, but didn't like really love it. But definitely cool game. You know, just like other people, it's became something that we played at parties all the time. I still play it with my friends online quite a bit. My brother-in-law lives in Canada, and that's kind of like how we communicate. Instead of being two dudes on the phone, we're two dudes on a headset playing Halo. So,
nice. I remember when this game first came out, there was some hype for the Xbox, but I think a lot of people thought that Microsoft was going to make something that flopped. Like, I don't think anybody really thought it was going to be a super big success, the Xbox at least, but I mean... Microsoft had enough money behind it that anything was possible, but Halo was one of the games that really put it on the map, right?
Yeah, it was the first time a non-Nintendo, Sega, or Sony company was coming out with a console in a while.
And Chris, did you have an Xbox, an original Xbox?
I don't think I got this, though, right away. Like, I had an early... I had an original Xbox, but I didn't play it a ton. But when I got a 360, I, like, would play, like, the original Halo and, you know, Halo 2 pretty much around the same time when they had come out. I think I had probably actually played Halo 2 first, and I liked it so much that I think I went back to play Halo for the story. But I, like, kind of like what Matt had said, like, I had already been playing Halo multiplayer for, you know, for a while at that point, because that was just, you know, this is kind of the thing you did with your friends, like, if you were going to play a video game around them, this kind of took the place of playing GoldenEye or something like that. This became like the new multiplayer shooting game to play.
Yeah, and like I played this game. I played it when I was in college because I think this game came out in November of 2001. It did, right at the same time as the Xbox launch. And Chris graduated in 2002, so I didn't really play this game probably until like 2002, 2003. But I remember the one thing that stood out for me, at least when I was playing this game, was the incredible co-op. So they had like a full campaign that was co-op, which was crazy for a console at that time. I remember for me, I played like modem to modem Doom 2, and I could never get it to run properly. With like, and we tried to co-op that game, and we'd play like, I don't even know if you were supposed to be able to do that, but I'd have somebody who we would like dial up each other's computers, and we would run through the first level of Doom 2 before the line got picked up by somebody, and then everything got fucked up. But yeah, so playing like a co-op campaign after like years of playing just Versus and GoldenEye and even like Perfect Dark, because that came out I think around the same time, or maybe the year before this. I think 2000 is when Perfect Dark came out. It was right. Pretty wild to play a co-op campaign.
Yeah, I think that I played Perfect Dark and Halo about the same time, and I played with my same friend, like one of my best friends growing up. And just the experience of playing co-op through this game and like going through these massive levels with like tanks and all these different alien races, and like, you know, there's a fair amount of like semi-open world level design on some of these levels where you can kind of go around and poke around in different places. Like doing that as a team and playing that on legendary mode was like pretty much how I experienced this game growing up. Like just, you know, playing from, you know, 9 o'clock at night until 6 in the morning, just trying to beat the whole thing on the hardest difficulty possible. Like it was just, you hadn't experienced that in first person shooters really to this point, not in a big way.
Yeah, and I mean, if you look at the history of first-person shooters, like, right before this, so 97 GoldenEye comes out, which is kind of like a big marker for console FPS games. I think it's number 3 on our list right now, or 4? 4.
4, yeah.
On our endless list. And then 98, you have Half-Life, which is like a big marker for storytelling within FPS games. And then you have, in 99, you get a bunch of games that are like big markers for competitive FPS games. So you have Quake 3 Arena, Unreal Tournament comes out, Team Fortress comes out. And those are just big games for competitive. But they're all on PC. They're not like a console experience.
Right. This was like the first esports like console FPS. I feel like, and like MLG was big around the same time, and even though this didn't have like, you know, native kind of online multiplayer with Xbox Live, it was still like a pretty big scene, especially for a console game in 2001.
Yeah, and you can find this game, so we mentioned it came out on Xbox, obviously, but you can find this game now on the Master Chief Collection on PC, and it's pretty cool in that version. You can hit tab and go back from the old graphics to the remastered graphics instantaneously at any point during the game, which was really cool.
I feel like cool.
What's that? I found like I ended up using the old graphics more.
100%. I feel like some of those, the new graphics, they like have like grass and stuff that just gets in the way.
Yeah, it was busy. And I think it kind of shows how, like, even though it was really simple textures and things like that, the like aesthetic design of this first Halo.
Well, isn't the Master Chief Collection Halo Combat Evolved, isn't that actually based off the, maybe it's not the PC port, but it's not, it's based off the one that like Gearbox developed, right? Like later when they were like reissuing it, like because I was like reading that there is like some actual like the original graphics aren't truly as good as the original Halo CE graphics because it was like a based off the PC port, I guess, and that there was like some issue with like the textures unless you have like unless you have like a flashlight like shining on an object, like you don't get all the texture. I was what I was reading.
Yeah, there's like different audio glitches and like certain cutscenes show weirdly like different angles and like different models in the background.
Mm.
There are some subtle differences, but overall the game's pretty similar.
Yeah, and I would say it's a pretty solid experience, even though I did run into a few glitches. I think I mentioned in our Discord chat that like when enemies sometimes dropped their weapons, they would clip into the wall and just spin around and make a horrendous noise. And that happened like maybe a dozen times in the 10 hours that I played. So that was something that happened. But I mean, like I said, toggling between old school graphics and the new graphics was pretty cool. And then also if you play multiplayer, you can play a playlist of whatever Halo you want. That's on there. So in the Master Chief Collection on PC right now, it's just 1 and 2, right? Or is 3 out?
It's Reach and 1, I believe, and I think 2 just came out.
Okay. Yeah, okay. So you can play a playlist of just all of those games. They just flop between the games, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, they have that on the Game Pass too for Xbox. They have Reach, they have 1 through 4, they have ODST, and you can play a mixture of playlists as well.
Yeah, it's super cool.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. And I play, like, same as you, Matt. Like, I play with my friends a fair amount. We play Halo 2 online because that was, like, the big multiplayer game that we did through high school. We would just, like, have big LAN parties, drag a bunch of TVs out, play, like, you know, 12 or 16-player Halo. But, yeah, it's cool to, like, be able to set up a playlist and be like, all right, we're going to play a little Halo Combat Evolved. We're going to play a little Halo 3, do a little Reach. But we always go back to Halo 2 for multiplayer.
Did anybody play any Bungie games before Halo? Because they like they existed, but they were very like niche. I feel like.
What were the Bungie games before?
So they had
was Brute Force one of them?
No, it was. I don't believe so. It was Marathon, which was a big like Mac Apple game, like a FPS game, like the first real FPS game on. That was designed for Apple systems. And then they had Myth 1 and 2, which are like, I want to say, like dungeon isometric dungeon crawler type things.
Yeah. I played Oni. Oni is the only one I really remember from Bungie.
I played Oni 2, and I didn't realize that was Bungie until I was doing some research for this pod. I was like, oh, interesting.
So it's like a weird case because they made those games that I mentioned, and then they opened up a West Coast studio, which made Oni, which is not related to any of those other games, really. So, but the people who made Oni actually designed the multiplayer for Halo.
Interesting.
Yeah, because they were going through a lot of financial difficulties at the time when they were making this game. Development started in 1997 after they worked on Myth 2, which again was like a real-time tactics fantasy game. And it was Halo was originally supposed to be an RTS, it was like a sci-fi RTS with realistic like physics and terrain deformations that you could do.
But an RTS for the Mac too, right? Wasn't that what they were aiming at?
Yeah, I think when they first were designing it, it wasn't going to be for Apple, but one of the guys who was like a executive at Bungie had a friend at Apple, and they'd worked on Marathon previously, and Steve Jobs asked them to show Halo at the 1999 Macworld conference, and they had a trailer that ran there that showed Halo in 1999. And it was supposed to be for Apple computers. And it was supposed to be a push to show that Apple actually had games. And it just never came to fruition. Just like Apple's games.
Yeah, turns out you don't have games. Ha ha.
Yeah, so, but before Macworld, it shifted to being a third-person perspective action game. And that's what they were going to do. But then they were like, when they were fooling around with getting into vehicles, they're like, this is so much cooler. To drive around the actual vehicle as opposed to being an RTS. That's why they shifted from an RTS to a third person. And then they're like, well, we can make it more like you're the actual soldier if we make it first person, make you feel like you're more part of the experience. And that's why they went with the first person perspective, I believe.
Yeah, apparently they, when they were still thinking of this as an RTS game, they had developed like some sort of like over the shoulder camera view so you could zoom in on your units. And that's how they were like, maybe we should make this a third person shooter game because this camera perspective is really cool. Like, and it's like much cooler to actually be like controlling a vehicle than like just clicking around. And so like from there, it ended up a first person shooter.
Yeah. And they said that they were like fooling around with the camera, and the closer they got to the soldiers, the better experience they had. So they were like, oh, maybe we should make this into like a single player thing as opposed to an RTS thing. But it's funny that they would eventually go on to make Halo Wars. Right. So the,
yeah, they eventually
RTS
got back
game.
There. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, so I guess Myth 2, which was the game they released before Oni and Halo, they shipped it with a bug in it that wiped hard drives if you tried to uninstall it. So they shipped 200,000 copies with this bug. And at that time, you couldn't really patch stuff, or people, it wasn't common to patch stuff via the internet. So they had to like recall it, and then they had to repackage all of these different boxes, 200,000 boxes. And I guess the cost behind that led to them being acquired by Microsoft because they almost went bankrupt. They had to close Bungie, their West Coast studio, and they reabsorbed them after Oni. And then they moved to Washington to be at Microsoft's Redmond, Washington's headquarters.
Huh. That's
interesting. And then somewhere in there, Microsoft like was like floating them some cash, and that's how they got absorbed into the Xbox. Isn't that right?
Well, they got acquired by Microsoft because they were like floundering,
right.
And Microsoft was obviously like just flush with cash. Especially in the late 90s, Microsoft was like the Amazon of their day. I mean, they still have tons of money, but they were like the biggest company in the world then.
This is when they were getting broken up as a monopoly then.
Right, exactly. So, and they were, the guy who was leading the Xbox development was basically like, I have all this cash and this makes so much sense for us to just acquire this company and bring it in-house as our like native software team. So they did that. Yeah, and then I guess other things that made this game special, I guess, for the Xbox is because they brought them in-house around 2000, they were really working directly with the Xbox console, so they could really optimize Halo for the console like no other software developers could at the time, and they could work directly with the engineers who were making the hardware. And they also had access to the Xbox controller before anybody, so they could fool around and make the controller experience better than they would normally have.
The original giant Xbox controller.
The Duke. The Duke controller.
Black and white buttons.
Yeah. What happened to those?
They became bumpers.
Yeah.
I forgot about those black and white buttons. Yeah. That's right.
Oh, they were obnoxious.
Oh, I hated that controller. That controller was such a such a turnoff.
That's how you switched grenades in Halo, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, in the flashlight, I think, too.
Grenades.
They re-released that recently, didn't they, the Duke? I believe they did.
Say that again?
I believe they re-released the Duke recently.
I think, like, a company made, like, a second, or, like, a third-party Duke controller. I think it was, like, Hyperkin made a Duke controller they were selling. I don't think it was very popular. I don't think it sold very well.
No.
I saw...
Shocker, a bad design came back and didn't sell well.
They also included, they included an HD screen on it, in the center of it, because it was so big, to, like, show your, like, health stats or whatever for games, but no one ever used it. I don't know. But I went to a Salvation Army once, like, 2 years ago, and I saw 8 Duke controllers just hanging on the wall. I was like, holy shit.
They were all underneath tables to keep them from wobbling.
Right.
Yeah.
But yeah, so what is this game? Besides being a first-person shooter, who wants to take a stab at the plot?
So the plot is you are a super soldier who's awakened on a USMC, I guess. It's like the United... Or UNMC, is that what it is?
Is that United not Nation? The Pillar of Autumn? Is Pillar of Autumn...
Yeah. The Pillar of Autumn is the name
right?
of the ship.
Yes. Right.
Yeah. And you're getting attacked by these aliens called the Covenant, and so... Your ship is eventually disabled and you crash land on this ring world called Halo. And basically the beginning of the game, you are kind of like organizing the Marines to figure out what this like Halo ring world is and trying to like mount some sort of kind of guerrilla resistance to the Covenant, which is like this, you know, much more advanced alien race that is investigating the ring world. And there's like some sort of like religious significance of Halo to the Covenant that you start to find out.
Yeah, and I guess it's all like happen. It all is just a coincidence, right? So they do a random jump from Reach, which is where the conflict starts, to somewhere because they want to lead the Covenant away from Earth, and they end up finding Halo, and the Covenant follow them to Halo.
Is that really the explanation that it's a coincidence that they go to Halo?
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, it's a coincidence. Or is it a coincidence? Because later in the game is they get into like some kind of mythology with, you know, humanity being like the chosen race against, you know, this greater galactic evil. So maybe it's not a coincidence. And there's always like kind of like religious significance behind the Halo ring. So it's coincidence, but not really a coincidence.
Yeah, and so the Covenant have been fighting humans for about 20 years before the start of the game. Humans have been getting their ass whooped, but the Covenant haven't found Earth yet, and that's kind of like the big deal. They find Reach, which is like their big economic and military hub, where the humans are growing, or I don't know if you want to call it growing, training super soldiers, genetically enhanced super soldiers, including John 117. Is it John 117? Is that how you say it? Or John
117, I think is how you go.
Okay. John 117, who is Master Chief. The super soldiers do a good job of beating back the Covenant, and the Covenant then wipe them out. They send more forces. They're just too much because the genetically enhanced super soldiers, the Spartans, they're called, right? Is that what they're called? I believe.
Yep.
There's not enough of them. So they launch from the Pillar of Autumn with Master Chief, and they go in a random slipstream to find Halo. And they get invaded on the ship, and that's when all of the stuff happens in the game.
So when they get invaded on the ship, the Covenant aren't protecting Halo?
No.
No.
Okay. They're just continuing the attack.
Yes. Halo's the third party, right?
But aren't they already like based on Halo, the Covenant?
I think they're aware of Halo, and they're not already on Halo when they get there, but they immediately like land their forces because they know of these rings and they have like strong religious significance to them.
So like when you are playing a level in like mid to late campaign of Halo, like for instance, Assault on the Control Room, whose control room?
So
that's Halo.
The Halo rings were constructed by the Forerunners.
So
the control room is the Forerunners, yeah.
Okay, all
right. Which is like an ancient race that is
They're like the space jockeys.
Yeah, exactly.
I did watch Alien 3 on Friday night, and that movie is okay.
That's the David Fincher one, right? Where they're
right,
in prison?
Right, yeah. I convinced my wife to watch it because it's like, oh, it's a David Fincher film. And it
I should go back and watch that one. I've seen all the other ones a bunch of times, but not that one. Well, maybe not four too. But
I feel like it's the problem with it is like one and two are really good, and then Resurrection is just like goofy good, and like Prometheus and Covenant are out there and kind of wild, and Alien 3 is just kind of stayed. It's not as like bombastic as the rest of them.
Yeah, it's like it reminds me of The Rock.
It does, yeah, because they're in prison.
A little bit, yeah. You know,
it's just like a really, it seems generic and like, not that The Rock's bad, but it's nothing special.
more of a late 90s action movie.
Yeah, and I was saying that to her when we were watching it, is like, they did this thing in the 90s, like, you saw it with the prequels and a lot of movies. When they made sequels to movies from the 80s and the late 70s, they would, like, get rid of the aesthetic completely, irregardless if it made sense in the actual timeline, just so they could, like, make their own stamp on it and make it, like, more 90s-y. And they did that in Alien 3.
It's like
and
a
they
brought up almost.
Yeah, yeah. So, kind of, like, ruins it a little bit, but nevertheless, it wasn't that bad of a movie. Back to Halo.
Well, it just goes to show you that Halo is kind of like a hodgepodge of a lot of different sci-fi, like, homages and tropes mixed into one. Like, Ringworld is a book series that they borrow from for the Halo rings, and, like,
yeah.
There's Alien, you know, because you got the Marines, so they're kind of like the Marines from Aliens, and there's all sorts of stuff mixed up in there.
I mean, just the whole scene where he takes the memory chip from the dead soldier and puts it in and watches the playback, that's, like, totally Aliens, with the scene where they're watching him on the vehicle, watching yep. the Marines get ripped up by the aliens. Yeah, I mean, this is just like trope. The greatest hits of tropes is what the story is, right? Sci-fi tropes.
Yeah, I kind of get the impression kind of what I was getting from, like, researching this episode is that the story itself was probably one of, like, the last things to, like, really get fleshed out, like, or at least, like, the world building behind the game sounds like it was, like, kind of like one of, like, the last things to get kind of fleshed out. And it's like they had, like, a general idea, it seems, like, where they wanted to go with the story, but didn't really have it all together necessarily till pretty late. That was kind of like my impression.
Isn't that like the whole 2000s thing where they were just like, we got to come up with a story. The story has got to be good, but if we need a sequel, we're fucked.
Right. You know, it's like even like we haven't mentioned the Flood, at least not by name, but it's like the Flood, even though they're kind of like stand in for zombies, they're like very, I don't know, Borg like from Star Trek, you know, it's like they're a hive mind assimilating conquering race, you know, like it's just it just seems like you just like open up like every major sci-fi franchise and you're like, yeah, we're gonna pull a little bit of this, a little bit of that, mix it all together.
Not to totally disagree with you, but they did have a novel that came out month before the game did, so
yeah,
I mean they were trying to do some amount of world building.
Yeah, they set up the whole story. They set up the whole story with Reach, which is eventually the story in Halo Reach, the prequel game that came out in like 2010.
Right.
But they set that all up before this game comes out.
I wonder what it would be like to go in a books in a Barnes and Noble in 2001 and see Halo and be like, what the hell is this, before the game comes out.
I have a memory of somebody sitting next to me in like civics in 10th grade reading like through the Halo book series. He was very obsessed with it, this kid.
Sounds like we should be friends. but yeah, so yeah, we mentioned the Flood. So the Flood is like this evil alien menace that is just straight up, the more I think about it, it's very Aliens inspired. They're basically zombies, but like when you first, when you're on the Covenant ship and you're trying to rescue the general and he's like on the wall, that's Aliens again.
Oh yeah, he's like in a pod.
Yeah.
Definitely.
And they have like the face huggers, the little like spores that, because what, Matt, you called them like fungus space zombies? That's pretty much
yeah
what
they're are. Yeah, they're like a fungal swarm, right?
But they're like the Half-Life guys.
Yeah, the head crabs.
The head crabs. Oh. They pop and they blow up. They're very satisfying to shoot because they just pop.
They pop and they'll kill like the other ones around them. So there's like a little splash effect.
Right.
I do like how they start like it becomes very apparent like they're taking over like Marines and Covenant alike. You know, basically the weapons like they're attacking you with, and you know, like the noises like the Flood infected Marines and Covenant make. I thought that was a cool like little touch that it wasn't, made it feel like they were truly like the greater evil because like they were just like non-discriminate in who they targeted in levels.
Yeah, some of my favorite parts of this game is where later on you get into like firefights between the Covenant and the Flood and you're just like weaving your way through it. Like there's a scene on that level where you rescue the Admiral, or not rescue, but you find the Admiral like stuck in the alien goo, and there's a seat, you like right after that a door opens and like Covenant special forces like come in, and if you don't engage with the enemies right away, they'll just duke it out in front of you and you can like kind of hide in the dark and watch them go at it. And like that plays out over all the like the second half of the game, basically.
Yeah,
it's definitely strategy
cool too.
Going forward too. The harder level you play, like the more that, you know, if you work with that strategy, it's very effective. Like playing on legendary and heroic and stuff.
It was just kind of anecdotal to me, so I don't know like how accurate or not this is, but it seemed like to me that the Covenant will prioritize the Flood over you, and the Flood will prioritize you over the Covenant. But that was just, yeah, like I said, that was just like anecdotal, like when I was trying to like wade through those three-way battles.
Yeah, I think it just depends on who they see and who's a threat. If you're like firing them or you throw a grenade. But yeah, there's some cool parts to this game. There's some cool parts to the story. Like I said, like the co-op, I think there's like moments when I play video games where I'm like, oh, this is pretty crazy. Like when I say when I played Super Mario 64 and you can able to control a character in 3D space the way you were, I thought at the time that was mind blowing. And this game, when I first picked it up and played co-op, I was like, at the time, this is mind blowing. But also a little bit to a lesser degree, when you see three different factions fighting each other, at the time, that was like a big thing for games.
So I guess we haven't really touched on the stuff that, you know, the heart of the game, the weapons, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. So the first thing I remember about, like, being blown away about this game was on the second level, I guess on the first level too, when you get the grenades and you chuck grenades and it's just like this explosive column that goes up from the ground and there's like chunks of earth flying everywhere. Like, usually grenades before this was like, I don't know, like a... like kind of cheesy like explosion flame. This was like chunks of earth being ripped up, and just throwing those at Covenant and seeing them fly, I was like, oh my god, this game.
It was so satisfying too with the plasma grenades, like when you like the first time you successfully get one to stick on an enemy, you feel like the man, you know, might as well yell
sticking
Kobe
a plasma
time.
Grenade yeah sticking a plasma grenade on an enemy has got to be like one of the most satisfying in any games to me, like the experience of just doing that and be like, haha, got you.
I can't think of any other first person shooter that relies on grenades so much as Halo. You're like constantly throwing them in this game.
Yeah, you need them even in multiplayer. You need them to like manage enemy positions and like give yourself cover. Like sometimes you're just throwing grenades to move around the map.
Yeah,
but it's nice that they are constantly refreshing your stock. You know, in other games I feel like grenades are a more like tactical, like, oh, you've got, you know, three or four, you got to really maximize your use. But you're right. Yeah. In this game, you can use them defensively almost to like hold back the AI.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would throw them down in like a hallway sometimes and like retreat and reload.
Right. Exactly.
Also, I think this game it was interesting that they make you try really every gun, cause you can only hold two guns at a time. Sometimes the ammunition's limited. So you have to like scour for enemy guns and use what they have or just use what's around. So I think I always like when games force you to get outside your comfort zone and try different things. Cause sometimes you get in a comfort zone and you're like, oh, this is good. But then you play the whole game with one thing and you never experience the other things.
Yeah.
So this game really makes you try everything.
Yeah.
And especially,
sorry, keep going. Yeah.
And especially because like, at the very outset of this game, I kind of forgot that energy weapons are better against shields. So I was like shooting them with the freaking assault rifle endlessly, and you'd have to reload like twice to take down a big enemy, and it sucked. And then I got the energy weapons, and I'm like, oh, I can just, you know, pull off the shield and then kill this guy pretty easily.
Yeah, and in the Call of Duty podcast we did, I might have given credit to Call of Duty of popularizing like the two weapon loadout, but I hadn't realized chronologically this was out first. I can't really think of many popular first person shooters before this that didn't let you kind of just have like a Quake or Doom style like eight weapons at a time kind of loadout.
Yeah, that was one of the things that stood out to me too. It's like, whoa, I gotta pick, like, if I just want a pistol, like, I like the pistol, but now I can't use my assault rifle because I need to keep this other weapon, you know, and you're just like constantly sorting through the different combinations. And they work differently against some of, like Mike, what you were saying, like the energy shields, like, are easy to take down with the plasma weapons. And like when you fight the flood later, the sniper rifle does absolutely nothing to the flood. But you need like some, like the shotgun or the pistol, like, are better than the energy weapons for killing the flood. Because sometimes you'll knock the flood down with an energy weapon, then they'll get right back up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The shotgun is, in this game, is, you know, that's, if there's a Hall of Fame for video game shotguns, like, the shotgun's got to go into the shotgun video game Hall of Fame, without a doubt.
Oh, it's, agree with that. It's insanely OP, and I have zero problem with it.
Yeah, it's so good it to be.
Yeah. It's very good against, like, the flood. It's very satisfying to take down waves of flood with the shotgun. But then you have to reload it, and the reload takes a little while. Which kind
the
of
reloading in this game for every single weapon, I think, takes way too long. With the amount of time, like, with how much the enemies can soak bullets, I found that the amount of time I was spending reloading was just, it seemed like forever.
Is that a function of, do you think that's like a weakness of the game, or do you think that's actually what their part of their core design? Because they wanted you to use energy weapons, which didn't have to reload.
Yeah, I mean,
but could overheat.
That's fair. Yeah, they could overheat. I don't know. I think my issue is more with how bullet spongy some of the enemies could be at higher difficulties than the reloading. But the reloading kind of exacerbated that when I was having to, you know, put a whole clip into, you know, one or two enemies.
I think it also creates like emotion though too. Like, you know, your enemies are constantly coming at you, so you're panicking, hitting reload button. You know, emptying the clip and then going right back at it while trying to avoid, like, you know, the flood.
Yeah, certainly. I found that I was constantly doing, you know, I was entering the reload animation. I would think it would be done. I would do another action that would cut the reload animation short, and I hadn't actually finished the reload, and I would end up with an empty clip when I went back to that weapon. I don't know. Just for me, it seemed too long. That was just a negative mark for me playing this game.
This the variety in weapons is pretty great in this game. There's the like homing needler. There's the like regular pistol that you have that has like the zoom and sniper shot. There's like the alien pistol that has like the charge homing shot. There's a ton of different weapons, and they all are very different in how they function. And some of them have like secondary features which are pretty cool as well. So. I think like the diversity in weapon type is a credit to this game as well.
Yeah, it makes it pretty balanced too, like at least in the single player. I never felt like maybe the plasma rifle was the worst. The thing with the, what are they, elites? Is that what they are?
Yeah. I think the plasma rifle is pretty good. I feel like the plasma pistol is kind of the weakest, but the charge shot is good when you're like trying to take out shields really quickly.
That's funny because like I found myself, which, like, this is not how I played the game, like, back in the day, but, like, through this playthrough, I was using that plasma pistol for everything. And it wasn't even, like, the charge shot. Just for whatever reason, I just really, like...
I would just rapid fire it. It seemed super good.
Yeah, I used it a lot, too. I would say that, you know, the only thing that it feels unbalanced in the multiplayer when I played was the pistol. Like, the bullet pistol. Yeah.
The combo of the shotgun and the pistol was, like, one of my favorite, gun combos in any video game. Just that like 2x scope on the pistol. I remember reading a Game Informer list of the best like video game weapons of all time in like 2007 or something, and the Halo pistol was number one on their list. Yeah, I was like, yeah, that checks out.
If you were good enough, the pistol was as good or better than the sniper rifle, really.
I think that like the assault rifle, I kind of like that they like make it underpowered because you have a lot of bullets, but it's not very accurate. And it just makes you use all the other weapons instead of relying on, like, what would be the go-to gun in a lot of games.
I was big on rushing in and, you know, firing a few bullets and then rushing in for melee attacks was my constant go-to move.
Yeah, and that was the thing I was going to say is that this game is really... I'm trying to think of a game, FPS before this, that relied on melee so much.
Yeah, it's so fluid, and it also, there's like a stealth element to it too, because if enemies don't see you, you can sneak up behind them and instant kill them with a melee hit. So I would play like co-op on Legendary sometimes, and like some of those control rooms where it's like the big circle, there's like sleeping enemies and enemies on control, and my friend and I would just like try to pick the path where we could take out the most amount of enemies silently and then just take the rest of them out.
Yeah, I did the same thing.
I can't think of any first-person shooter until this that used melee as much. I think you're right, Mike.
It feels really good, too, to hit somebody. Really especially with a smaller weapon. Once you get to the heavier weapons where it takes a little bit longer, it's like... kind of sucks, but it's good. It's interesting that they even have like the different animations for each weapon, right? So, and different times it takes to hit somebody.
And I don't know if it actually is a difference, but for some reason, meleeing with the Needler just appears to be doing more damage because you're shoving the spikes right into them.
that's fun.
I always felt a little guilty whenever I meleeed a sleeping grunt.
They don't know what they're doing. And that's another
point.
That's another point too, is like the diversity in enemies. Even though there's only like really, how many enemies are in this game? Like 8 different enemies?
I don't even know. I mean, if you count different colors, I guess, yeah. But there's what, 3 different covenant
types?
Grunt,
there's grunts, elites, and then there's, what's the big one?
Yeah,
with the shield.
Brutes?
No,
hunters.
Hunters.
Yeah, then there's also the flat jackals. Characters. Yeah.
Yeah, there's the jackals that have the little shields that are like defensive.
Oh, yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. 4.
Yeah, but Chris, you're right. Like, there are actually different like ranks based on their color too. So like certain elites are more dangerous, and like the gold elites are like the zealots, and they have the energy shields or the energy sword. Excuse me.
Right. And I never got taken down by a sword, by the way, in this game. Ooh. I only think you see him 3 or 4 times.
Yeah, you don't see them that much.
They seemed more menacing when I played them when I was younger. And I agree, this time I just was able to see them pretty easily and take them out.
There's also the like special forces ones that are invisible, too.
Yeah. But I mean, they do a good job with the how the AI works with all of them. So the elites are, if you kill an elite with a grunt around, the grunts will freak out and run away.
Yeah. So in general, it seems like the behavioral AI in this game is pretty good, especially for the time. The fact that like the small enemies could run away, I don't know, I feel like they flanked you pretty well. They are pretty aggressive with grenades.
Their flanking is like very very effective sometimes. Like, there's some places where I'd be like pinned down and there'd be like a tank shooting at me, and there'd be like a hunter, so I'm trying to like manage my ammo, and then all of a sudden I'd see like 3 grunts running over to the side and like another elite like zigging through them, and I was like, oh god, I'm in trouble.
And it was nice to like, I don't know how much of a function this actually had, but the enemies also like chatter and like talk to each other, which I think, you know, added a lot to the atmosphere.
They call it
the games for this time
on the director's commentary for this game, they call it what is it, grunt comedy, because they have like, they try to insert like jokes into the grunt speak. So like when you come down in the ship, I forget, the Foehammer, is that what it's called? The like transport ship.
Yep.
And you're like dropping down in the tunnel, like the grunts all freak out and like run away and like blah 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 blah, and they're like talking to each other. They'll be like in those cutscenes, they call it grunt comedy.
Isn't a lot of the, especially with the elites, isn't a lot of the dialogue just like the Marines dialogue, but like slowed down and reversed?
Oh, it could be.
I think it is.
That's funny.
Yeah, I do like the way that like the different, like grunts are pretty weak on their own, but if there's a bunch of them and they have like more advanced weapons, they can give you a run for your money. And like the jackals are pretty defensive, and the elites too. Like they're so mobile and move around. Like if you'll be standing right in front of one with a sticky grenade and throw it, and it'll like dodge, leaning down, and then like jump to the side and start shooting at you, like all in a second. And you know, sometimes they'll like take a hit and run back and retreat. Sometimes they'll like feel emboldened and press up on you. Like there's different scenarios that they'll work through.
You know, I think the one biggest innovation feature that we haven't talked about in this game is that the regenerating shield. I think that's one of the biggest things that this game brought to FPS in the genre that people would copy going forward. Like,
so Mike, what are your thoughts on the Warthog?
I hate the Warthog.
Oh, here we go.
But yeah, I mean, I don't. Towards the end, I got better with it, but so your controls are the left stick moves you forward if you press forward, right? And then your right stick controls the direction you go, and it doesn't control your camera.
It basically feels really weird. It functions like you're driving as if you were walking in first person, basically. It's the same control set.
It feels incredibly strange in 2020 to drive a car that way in a game.
It is unique to most games that control scheme, but I'm so used to it.
I had a problem with it. Yeah,
yeah, it doesn't bother me.
It's kind of just like point in the direction you're going to go.
And I think it goes to like the core of Halo's gameplay, which is like it's just very simple, refined, like not bare bones, but like not overly complicated. Like there's not like three buttons you need to push to do anything.
I will say that the Warthog, to me, whenever I saw it, I was like, oh, they want me to be in a co-op right now. Because, like, unless there's a couple times when you have AI with you who are shooting the gun, but most of the time it's just you driving the Warthog, and it's like, this kind of sucks. I want somebody to be shooting with me.
I think one of the things I would definitely change about this game, replaying it, is I would add far more Marines to every level.
Yeah.
And I would make them not die as easily. Maybe be less effective. Because they were able to actually take down enemies. But I think, I agree. I think the times where you're alone in this game, where it almost seems like you're expected to have companions. And yeah, I mean, obviously you could do it in co-op. But when you're playing it single player, they should have just added more like fodder Marines.
Yeah. Yeah. I will say, too, some of the areas when you're driving the Warthog, it feels kind of like the Sonic the Hedgehog level, where they're like, we want you to go really fast, but not too fast. And they'll slow you down with obstacles. So, like, for example, I know they're trying to increase the tension on the last escape part of the final level, but they make you weave in and out of stuff, and there's some points where you just stop, and it's so frustrating. You just want to keep barreling down this drive because it's so long. The escape section, and they just like, nope, we're gonna put an obstacle right here in front of you that you have to stop and then go backwards and go up and around it in order to go there, and it just like stops your momentum and you're like, fuck,
it ruins the emotion like that you feel as you're trying to wrap up the game, and you know the panic that's being created and everything else. It's
it just feels like fake tension. It's like they could have done it where you didn't have to have those obstacles, and it would feel a lot better if they just extended it a little bit more.
There are definitely some sections of this game where like it plays better in co-op, and you can see that they're like had co-op in mind. Like that last chase, like you don't have any Marines in the Warthog with you,
right?
So if you have a co-op guy in the back shooting, it's like, okay, cool, like we got to get the hell out of here. But when you're just driving by yourself in the Warthog and not shooting at anybody, it's a little flat.
Right. I'll also say one of the we haven't really gotten into, and we've been praising this game a lot. One of the gripes that I have with this game is that it's kind of like asset reusing 101 in a lot of areas. Like the level where you have to take out the shields, which is pretty dumb. You have to jump into the shield generator to take it out as opposed to hitting a button.
Your shields to overload their shields. That's what you're doing.
Sure.
Makes sense
sure.
When you think about it.
Yes, it totally makes abundance of sense. But anyways, that area, you have to go through like the same room like 5 times in that level, and it's so annoying. And the library is like, everybody says that it's like one of the worst levels in an FPS.
Just like
the same shit over and over and over again.
The library didn't bother me, because I thought that kind of like, I don't know, I think the Flood are like an effectively creepy enemy. And I kind of liked... The library is a little too long, but like I don't think it's bad. But I liked the feeling of dread I had, like the Flood are just pouring out of like pipes and coming after me, and I'm fighting them off while this like smug little flying guilty spark thing is like opening doors and I have to wait for him. I don't know. I think the library gets a bad rap. The energy shield level though was rotten. That was the only level I didn't like in the game.
My primary, so the reusing of the assets is one thing, but also in some of the levels, the textures on the walls don't change and they reuse the same areas, and it's hard to tell where you are supposed to go.
Yeah, where you've already been versus where you're going.
And they even in when they were playtesting this, people got lost a lot, so they added in arrows on the ground.
Yep.
There's legit white arrows in some of these levels to tell you where to go. And I was like, when I first saw it, I was like, that's an arrow. And I was like, because I had been there for a while and me playing, and then I was like, holy shit, that's an arrow. They're actually telling me where to go.
Yeah, I think the reusing textures doesn't bother me so much, but like the literal copy pasting of rooms so frequently. I didn't even get to the library or the energy shield level on this replay, because between assault on the control room and what is it, the first flood level, you go through the same room probably 4 or 5 times.
Right.
And it's just like, it's bloated for the sake of scale, and I think it's bad in 2020. I think when this game came out, it was different because, you know, no game had done scale like this, especially on a console, but it was brutal replaying it.
Yeah, especially when you compare, like, so that control room level where you go through that same kind of, like, hexagonal room,
yeah,
or whatever it is.
Right.
So, like, I feel like the first half of this game, and this was something I felt even back in the day, like, it's so exciting and it builds so much, and this is before the flood is introduced, but, like, every level is new and you're getting, like, different flavors of weapons and enemies as you go along.
And they're, like, new environments, too.
Right, yeah. And part of this is a function of, like you said, like the scale. Like, these are kind of semi-open world levels a little bit, or like much larger at least.
Right.
So I could see, like, people are not used to that. Yeah, people are used to being on a rail more or less. So now you got to direct them around. But when you get to that second half, like, part of me kind of likes that, like, okay, the flood are here. You're seeing levels now that the flood have destroyed this ship or, like, taken over this area, and you're going through in reverse. But yeah, it's luckily they don't do it with every single level from the first half of the game, but they do it with, like, 3 of them. And, you know, they play a little differently. Like, you get back to the Pillar of Autumn, you know, you're going through, like, sections you haven't seen before. But, yeah, I mean, they're copying and pasting a lot of stuff, and you're just like, the second half of the game feels a little bit more of a slog than the first half to me.
Yeah. I just think Assault on the Control Room is really what broke me. That level's just so long.
I love that level. That's, like, one of my favorite levels, I agree about those endless rooms is rough.
It's, like, the same room.
Well, they also make you go to one area, and then they're like, leave, go to another area, and then you go back to the first area, and that assault on the control room, and you're like, oh my fucking
And you're climbing, God. Like, you're crossing the same bridge, like, 4 times. It's
right.
It's just, like, once or twice is okay, but
it
would have been better if the level was 15 minutes shorter.
But compare that to, like, the Silent Cartographer level right before, where you land and, like, the pelicans on the beach, and you go up the beach, and you're on this big circular island.
Silent Cartographer,
like,
is amazing. I think that's
a great
level.
There's all these different places you can go, and you can kind of decide what order you want to do it in.
I think they're, just as a rule, like, FPS games, or most games, their levels shouldn't take you, like, you know, 40 minutes to go through. It should take you 15 to 20 minutes. And then you change up and go something new.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a function of variety. And I think it's, like, a function of, you know, how is the tension high the whole time? Like Doom Eternal, for instance, came out recently, and those levels are, like, 40 minutes long.
Yeah, but those levels also have, like, discrete encounters, right?
Exactly.
So and those encounters will last you, like, 10 minutes.
Right.
I always thought of this game as being kind of like trying to take on the mantle of the new Doom. Like, Master Chief looks like Doom Guy. Like, he's a green soldier.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're restricting the number of weapons. So it's kind of like Doom with a twist, with a more sci-fi feel to it. But it's that
like
big console, or, you know, at the time, console first-person shooter that kind of changes the rules for first-person shooters.
A more media-friendly Microsoft first person shooter.
Exactly. Yes. Not quite as gory and horrifying.
Right. But I could, like, Master Chief is Doom Guy, right? I mean, that's like the design has to be inspired by that a little bit, at least. But yeah, so one thing we didn't talk about, well, we've touched on a little bit, but multiplayer. Xbox, the original Xbox, had Xbox Online. This game was not enabled Xbox, because I think Xbox Live came out a year after this game, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they did have multiplayer. You could do LAN multiplayer games. And it was
Link,
up to,
I think it was called.
System Link was
yep.
it called? Okay.
Yep.
You could do up to 8 players, is that right, in the multiplayer?
I think for one, yeah. I don't know if you could do up to 16.
I thought it was 16.
And
for some reason, I thought Blood Gulch went to 16.
Maybe you're right. I'm not sure.
And there was a weird thing, too, where you could download, like, I remember I had an app on my computer that I could System Link to my Xbox and play online. It was like a weird, unofficial kind of like online multiplayer.
They did port Halo to PC like 2 years after it came out too. Like there was an original PC port.
Yeah, this was, I like had an Ethernet cable from my PC to my Xbox for Halo 1. But it never totally worked, for me at least.
Weird.
Yeah.
But yeah, so the Xbox had four controller ports. You could play four players locally. So that was what most people did at the time. I think the big thing for this game versus the previous console FPS games was that it had a variety of modes that was a big deal. Also, the maps had a big diversity in the scale of the maps and just in the number of maps. And also, you could put vehicles onto the maps. So, right?
Yeah, it was very, I don't know if sandboxy is the right word, but it had like a similar vibe to Battlefield games where, you know, they had bigger levels where, you know, vehicles were an option, you know, there could be someone dominating the map with a vehicle, but, you know, you had the rocket launchers or different, you know, ways to take them down. It was,
right.
The big deal, I think, for Halo multiplayer specifically was that it was all on a console. Like, PC had been doing this, but Halo kind of like made that much more widely available to people that just had Xboxes.
Right.
And obviously, you know, now there's plenty of console multiplayer games that are on par with PC sort of experiences.
Right. Yeah, and this game is known specifically for, you know, Slayer. And was Slayer originally this game? Was that where Slayer comes from?
I think so.
I feel like,
that's the mode, yeah. Instead of Deathmatch.
That's just the Deathmatch, yeah.
Yeah. And then they have Capture the Flag. What other modes do they have here?
King of the Hill. There was, what is it, Blood Skull or something? Wasn't there something?
Yeah, there's like a skull mode. I don't know if that's in one or if it's in two, but you have to like hold a skull. And
right.
If you're holding it, you're getting points.
Right, but it was like a team game where like you'd protect the guy with the skull.
Was this one that had Griffball, or did that come later?
I think that was later on.
I don't know what that is.
I think that was in Reach. I think that was two. Oh, was that Reach?
It was in Reach.
Had it. I don't know if they had it in two, because I don't think I played that one online. But yeah, Reach, Griffball was big in Reach. That was a wicked fun mode.
This one we get like the electro hammers, right? So yeah, that's got to be a later one.
Yeah.
Yeah, those came in three. Those started then.
Okay.
Yeah,
or two? I'm not sure. Maybe three.
Compared to the later Halos, this was definitely stripped down, but it similar to Golden. Like, I mean, GoldenEye, I think, is a pretty good comparison or like reference point for this game. Like, it kind of, you know, GoldenEye started the whole local console first-person shooter multiplayer, or at least like really popularized it. Perfect Dark was like the next half step where it just like flushed it out, and then to me, like, this was the kind of next generation of local first-person shooter multiplayer, and it just became super popular. I think multiplayer for Halo Combat Evolved is like its biggest influence by far.
So, I think we're at a good point where we can start talking about the ranking of this game.
Oh, boy.
And just so, before we get into that, just some tidbits here for you guys to consider when you're ranking. Halo is probably one of the biggest reasons why there's three companies in the console game today.
Definitely.
I think that's a fair thing to say.
It's not because of Fusion Frenzy, I'll tell you that.
Right. Halo is also probably one of the larger reasons why there's so many console FPS games and why they sell so well, because it's just helped to develop that, as Matt just went over, from GoldenEye to Perfect Dark to Halo. It's kind of like the iterative steps you can see. IGN ranked Halo as the fourth best FPS of all time. Can you guess what the games are ahead of it?
Half-Life.
Half-Life 2.
Yes.
Half-Life
and Half-Life 2 are ahead of it.
Oh,
there's
wow.
One more game.
Deus Ex?
No, Quake? It's Doom.
Doom yeah.
Is. So. GameSpy, before GameSpy went under, also ranked it as the number 10 most overrated game of all time.
Seems reasonable.
I guess that's why they went under.
bad takes like that.
I will say also, and I think we have this on this podcast, there is a big split amongst people who played FPS games on PC prior to the launch of Halo in terms of who thinks it's really that great, right? So there's people who played like Quake and Unreal Tournament and these games that were on PC and they had access to them, and then Halo came out and they were like, it is what it is. Because those games existed, they just weren't as popular because PC gaming wasn't that popular until like Half-Life 2 and Steam came out. When Steam came out and they had the marketplace, it became a lot more easier for to get games on your computer. So it just became more popular. And that was like the late 2000s, the late aughts. But yeah. Beyond that, that's what I got for you.
It's yeah, true. I played some level of... I mean, I played PC games before I had an Xbox, or probably before I had a PlayStation 2, maybe around the same time. But it was more like Medal of Honor style. So there was some online multiplayer, but it wasn't that like arena Quake style. That was something I didn't play that much.
Right. I mean, I didn't play those games either. When I was playing PC games at that time, I was more playing like strategy games or like 4X games, like Civilization 3 and...
Yeah, same.
Command & Conquer games when I was playing stuff on PC. So I'm trying to think if I played... Was it Call of Duty? No, not Call of Duty. What's the one, the EA shooter?
Medal of Honor.
Medal of Honor.
Assault. Was it? Yeah. Yeah, Allied Assault. That's what the one I played that those games and stuff like that. But
yeah, I mean, like at this point, Team Fortress, Counter-Strike, Unreal Tournament, those were, I think, the more recent online, like big first-person shooters by 2000.
Right. Was Counter-Strike out then? Yeah, it was. 2000. So yeah, there were a lot of first-person shooters, but again, we're like we said, a lot of people didn't have access to it, and this game was like a way to popularize what was already happening in other communities. But where do we start when we're ranking this? As we said, this our endless list goes from number one Super Mario 64. All the way down to number 84, Jurassic Park Trespasser. You can find a link to the entire endless list in the podcast description for you to check out there. It exists there. There's 84 games. It's our 85th game. We have a bunch of games from 2001. I'll say just as like a start, this game is way better than Call of Duty, which we have as our number 39 game.
that's safe to say, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of funny Call of Duty is so far down. I guess I would have thought it would be higher. I don't see that much daylight between Call of Duty and Halo, but maybe I'm crazy.
Whoa. You might be. Whoa, settle down.
Let me just ask a broad question. How many people in this podcast, doing this episode right now, would say this is a top 10 game?
This is easily a top 10 game for me. Yeah.
I think it's like, I don't think we should start higher than 10 for sure.
If we're going to put this in the 10, I'm willing to work up through the 10.
Yes.
Listen, so I'll say this as a marker. So number 22 is WWF No Mercy. It came out in 2000. Halo's a better game than No Mercy.
Yeah. Well, let's start from there. I vote starting from there. If that's cool.
What other games do we have in here? I think this game's a better game than Red Dead Redemption.
I agree with that.
So we went from 22 to 13.
I don't know if it's better than Final Fantasy VII. Chris, you're the mega fan, aren't you, for Final Fantasy VII? You really think Halo's better than Final Fantasy VII?
I didn't
Final Fantasy VII that much.
I do think it's better. I mean, I think, you know, let's put the legacy part aside. When I think back to Halo, like, you know, other Matt, him and I met in 2003, and like, this is a game that, like, you know, our friendship, you know, grew on because we spent a lot of time, you know, hanging out together, playing multiplayer together, and I had like a lot of other friends that like play this game multiplayer with and stuff like that, and just it's fun, you know, on a single player mode. I think it feels like a very like cinematic type game. You know, and It's I think it's a cool world to kind of play through. It's more than just like a shooting game. It feels like you're kind of playing the start of like a franchise's experience. You know, like you're going to, you know, there's going to be more to the story, and kind of going back and playing through it again. It's like I feel like I'm watching like A New Hope or something like that. And I know there's going to be more story to be told. And yeah, I don't know.
And like, the ability to play through that story in co-op mode with a friend too, just like made it so much more rich to me. Like some of my fondest memories growing up are playing co-op Halo.
But does that mean no matter what the game, as long as it's got a co-op campaign, it's
no. Specifically Halo. There's plenty of other co-op games I've played, but like playing this particular game in co-op was just, oh, I love it.
Matt, I know you don't consider it.
Like that's when people play co-op games, they play co-op Halo online. Like I was saying at the beginning of this podcast, like, you know, I think, was it Steve was saying that he still plays with his friends online. Like I play with my brother-in-law online, some of the later Halos, but we do go back and dip into Combat Evolved here and there, and still holds up, and you can hit the select button there or whatever you want to call it and dip into the old graphics and feel that nostalgia. And it's, you know, I think that's a big part of that game.
I think the multiplayer specifically was really fun when I was digging around with it for this week.
I think the multiplayer I agree. I think the multiplayer is the biggest sort of contribution or quality part of this game. I think the campaign's not that great.
Ooh, I disagree. I do love the campaign. I totally understand the criticism of like how it reuses certain assets, and like there's certain things like they introduce an energy sword, but you never get to use it. Like there's a Covenant rocket launcher, you never get to use it. There's some.
You can use it in the multiplayer though.
Right, but then I think that may have been an addition later. I don't think that was true.
Yeah,
originally.
Okay. I don't think the original one could. Yeah, I don't know. It just seems pretty. Like I think the biggest sort of achievement of the campaign was the scale, but I don't think that necessarily translated to quality. I think
the weapon variety, the graphics, like the realism of explosions, like the AI was better than anything. And we were kind of hating on the Marines, but at the time, like having a squad that was like semi-competent that could ride around with you. Like when you drive the Warthog, you're basically driving a Marine who's driving around shooting people. And they're not that good at it, but like they, at the time, they were way better than any AI that was not like a scripted, this AI will do X, Y, and Z and kill this enemy.
Like, do we know if that is AI or if it's a script for Marines in Halo?
I think it's AI.
Yeah, it's AI. Because like that, most of the time before this, it was all scripted stuff, right?
I mean,
maybe some exceptions, but I'm thinking of like in GoldenEye when you have
That's all scripted.
That's all scripted, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, just on, I know Matt doesn't like the legacy argument, but Final Fantasy VII and Halo have big legacies. Final Fantasy VII introduced a lot of people to RPGs and broadly popularized RPGs to a certain extent in the United States.
And it took it to the next like generation too, like the 3D sort of.
Yes. But I'll say this about Halo is that Halo popularized, did the same thing for FPS games, and I think it proved a market on consoles that we still experience today, whereas RPGs aren't really that big of a thing now, right?
Yeah, and I mean, you know, to your point, like, Halo was, like, the zeitgeist for a long
time. Yeah, I was just going to say, when Halo 2 came out, like, Halo was kind of a surprise when it came out. When Halo 2 came out, it was this long-awaited, like, cultural moment where, I was kind of making this point on our Discord thread, but, like, David Cross and Michelle Rodriguez and, like, all these celebrities just wanted, like, bit voice roles in that game. And this is for the second title. And then, like, obviously everything blew up with multiplayer and online and Xbox Live after that. But none of that happens without Halo being a huge, huge phenomenon.
I think you just
Xbox doesn't happen without Halo being a huge, huge phenomenon.
Yeah.
Yeah, it stopped Microsoft from being a nice little startup company. But, JK. But, like, I think, like, just to kind of add to the legacy discussion, I mean, like, how many games did you hear that came out after this that were called the Halo killer? You know, this is supposed to be a Halo killer. You know, like, that's, like, how important...
Can you give me an example?
Yeah, a lot of them didn't really go anywhere. Wasn't Killzone supposed to be one, and then wasn't,
Oh, yeah.
Resistance, the Fall of Man.
There was a litany of them, I feel like, in the 2000s. They were like, is this Sony's Halo killer? And, you know, it's just, you know, that's, you don't, I feel like you don't hear many games like kind of talked about in that sort of reverence.
We literally did a episode two episodes ago on Splinter Cell that was supposed to be a Metal Gear Solid killer. So I think they say that quite a lot, actually.
I just, or I should say, killer, and PlayStation 3 Haze was supposed to be the Halo killer, apparently.
What? What game? Haze? Right. Never heard of it.
But yeah, I mean, I think this game goes above Final Fantasy VII. I have a soft spot in my heart for RPGs, especially Final Fantasy VII, but I think this game goes above it. I don't have a problem with that. And I think this game is, like, just in terms of 14 and Star Fox, I think this game is has so much more to offer than Star Fox 64. So
yeah, yeah, I'm a big believer in Red Dead Redemption, but I'm putting Halo above Red Dead Redemption easily.
Yeah, same here.
I agree.
I think that once you approach BioShock, that's where you got to slow down a little bit too, because that is kind of, it's not the same type of game, but it's another first-person shooter with like a very built-out world and a lot of legacy, and just putting it in the context of like, how does it stack up to BioShock, which what came out like 6 years after it too. I don't personally think that BioShock has nearly the same legacy as Halo.
No.
But it is considered one of the great games. So.
Right.
I mean, I think the single player campaigns, well, BioShock even doesn't have any multiplayer whatsoever, right?
I don't think so.
I mean, I think the single player campaigns aren't even comparable.
No.
But, you know, comparing the single player of BioShock to the multiplayer of Halo, I think is really where the meat of the argument is.
Yeah, I think the controls and like the flow of combat in Halo to me is much better. I liked the BioShock combat a lot, but sometimes it felt a little slow when you had to go through different menus.
Yeah,
there's none of that in Halo.
Yeah.
You have to handicap BioShock too, right? Or Halo, because it's it came out 6 years before, and for a generation before BioShock, and I would say it holds up. I wouldn't say just as well as BioShock, especially the single player, but the multiplayer specifically, as you guys have all said, is like frenetic and fun in a way that I never reached that level of fun with BioShock.
And
I really liked BioShock.
Yeah. And I think that if you go up a little bit more, if we're comfortable with that, to Super Metroid, like Super Metroid's a very important game. I enjoyed it at times, but it wasn't like a fun game for me. I mean, I've played Halo more than 10 times. Like, obviously I find this game extremely enjoyable. And Super Metroid was my pick, but like it was a slog at times. So I think it goes above Super Metroid.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I think the biggest thing for me on this list, if we're going further than Super Metroid, which I'm okay with, is Shadow of the Colossus is like the next big stop, because it's like it's the combination of a story, design of a world, and the gameplay that is really good compared to something like Halo.
I was going to stop before that. I think Shovel Knight is like a mechanically perfect game, and to me that's my wall. I don't see Halo surpassing Shovel Knight. That's 7.
Oh,
I don't really,
I
can't speak
definitely
much
than Shovel
to Final
Knight.
Fantasy IV at number 8. So
yeah, I mean, Final Fantasy IV is like my personal favorite game of all time, but I'm trying to kind of like objectively also kind of think of Halo versus Final Fantasy IV, and you know, I think Final Fantasy IV, I hold it so high a lot because of like nostalgia. That was like just like my favorite game growing up, and I just played it over and over and over and over again. But objectively, I think Halo should go above it, but I agree, once you start hitting Shovel Knight and stuff like that, like, this isn't Halo 2, this is the first Halo. Like, Halo 2, I think, is a much different conversation when we get to, like, this area, to me. But, yeah, I think this is, like, where Halo starts to, you know, it becomes hard for
why
me.
Why do you think it goes above Final Fantasy IV?
I mean, you know, Final Fantasy IV, I think, is as much as, like, I enjoy it, it is a pretty standard fair RPG, right? Like, it's not, like, it's not, like, recharging the genre. It's not, like, some game-changing game. It's pretty much, like, just I don't want to say like by the numbers Final Fantasy game, because I think it was a lot much more developed Final Fantasy game at that point, but it wasn't like it was some groundbreaking RPG, and it's just okay, a game so that resonates with me.
I'm taking notes on the time on when you're saying this, and I'm writing it down for future arguments.
1:29 p.m. for 2020.
Okay. I'm just going to play this back whenever we take out this clip and play it back whenever we're having a conversation around Final Fantasy IV.
Listen, a lot of it is, it's a great RPG. I think one of the best RPGs ever, but, it didn't change gaming like Halo did.
I will agree with that.
And that's kind of where I get to, and we don't have to jump all the way up, but this quickly. But so, like Shovel Knight, I love that game. Shadow of the Colossus, I've not played, but I've heard this stopgap argument about Shadow of the Colossus before. To me, though, like how many people have played Shadow of the Colossus? Like, what is the impact ultimately that Shadow of the Colossus had? It had some impact. It is like. It's got that artistic element to it and that completeness of vision that we all love here. But I just think that Halo is a bigger game and more impactful and more influential than both of those.
When we were talking about BioShock, we were saying, or Mike said, we need to handicap Halo or BioShock because Halo came out a generation beforehand. Well, it came out a generation beforehand, which allowed it to have the legacy and the impact for an additional 6 years. So I think we're already kind of giving it its Halo its due, or, you know, giving it a little bit of added weight because, yes, it's influential, but it came out earlier. It's, you know, it's mechanically a worse first-person shooter, I think, than BioShock. So, like, I think there has to be a limit, I'm saying, to the impact argument. Like,
yeah, that, that's
otherwise
fair.
You're
but
just
going
to only have old games at the top.
I do think also that Shovel Knight has had an impact in terms of its success showing what indie games can do.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
To some extent.
In only
so,
6 years since it came
right.
out.
Yeah. Right.
But
so.
I still don't think it stacks up to Halo. And I disagree with the mechanics argument. Like I think that Halo's mechanics, they show some age to them for sure. But they're still very, very tight, and they're still like the core, like, kind of control scheme that entire series was built around. So it's
right.
It plays fluidly to me.
So, how would everybody feel if Halo came in at number 7?
I think that's perfect, actually. That's like right where I would put that.
I think it's a worse game than Shovel Knight, for sure.
I think it's a better. So I don't think we're getting there, but. I mean, we've been comparing it to GoldenEye 007 the whole time. I want to put it above GoldenEye 007. I think it's a better game in every respect, and it had the impact that GoldenEye did. Same argument. Like, GoldenEye got there earlier. It had more time. Obviously, it's got a lot of weight to it.
I think
Halo's the next version of that, and it's a better version of that.
I think that, okay, so if we handicap GoldenEye a little bit more because it came out, you know, four years before it on a different platform with less horsepower, I think I'm more interested in replaying GoldenEye for all the secrets and stuff you can unlock versus playing Halo.
I think the GoldenEye campaign is just much better. It's far more varied. There's more weapons. There's, like you said, there's like different achievement cheats you can sort of go for.
Is Sean right. Bean? Sean Bean's in the game?
I think even the shooting, like the controls suck, but like the shooting model's better. You can headshot guys and kill them. You can't really do that so much in Halo.
What? Yes, you can.
Oh, yes, you can.
You can definitely headshot guys in Halo.
You can headshot guys, but you still... There's still so much bullet sponginess in Halo, I think, compared to GoldenEye. I mean, GoldenEye allows you to do... What do you... Hold down the R button, and you can do, like, the fine aiming. You can't really... Halo doesn't allow for that kind of precision.
Well, I just feel like the natural control scheme of Halo allows for that precision. You don't need to hit another button to become more accurate. You just need to move and point your gun in a way that allows you to be more accurate.
No, but even if you do that, depending upon your weapon, you miss because you are...
There's a
spray to the weapon.
Yeah, it depends. I mean, certain certain weapons allow you to aim with like a sight. So
I think you can have the argument either way. I think Halo... is a little bit more realistic than GoldenEye, right? So, I don't know. I just think, like, looking back on the campaign, considering how repetitive the campaign was in Halo and the diversity of level design that's in GoldenEye, and the fact that if you beat it within a certain time, the levels on certain difficulties, you unlock things like extra levels or different things you can do in multiplayer. And I think the multiplayer, even though we all like think when you picture GoldenEye in your head, you're like, oh, this control scheme sucks and it's hard to do. But once you play it for like a half an hour, it actually is quite intuitive still. And I enjoy it. And I think also GoldenEye is kind of the basis for what Halo did for multiplayer, local multiplayer at least, with the four boxes.
Oh, absolutely.
So, and even if you, I'm trying to think, if you press pause in Halo for Xbox, did it show you like where you were in terms of the score, like you did in GoldenEye? Because I feel like, yeah, I feel like they took a lot from GoldenEye in that regard, in terms of like UI and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, GoldenEye, if we're going to talk about pause menus, at least GoldenEye, you got to look at your watch. Like, there was a more, looking at the watch to me was like a clever, like Dead Space-esque sort of, you know, like in-world UI.
Immersion.
Right,
immersion. Yeah.
I don't think these games are comparable, to be honest. I think
I think that they are very comparable, and
I think they're very comparable.
Poor choice of words. I don't think they're in. I think they are four or five spaces apart in this list.
Anyway,
I think we just disagree on the controls, but
I'm really glad your camera's turned on so that I can see Steve shake his head.
I'm SMHing right now. I agree with like the criticisms of the level design like being stronger in GoldenEye, but I think that there's a greater variety of weapons, but I think that the tightness of the control scheme and like the two weapon options and the better AI and like yes, Halo reuses some levels as you go down, and that can be a little bit of a negative against it. But initially, those first levels, when you play them, like I would rather play any one of those levels over a GoldenEye level. And GoldenEye is another game that I probably played 10 times through when it came out, too. So, I mean, I'm no stranger to GoldenEye, but that's my take. I'm just going to leave it right there.
So where does this game go?
I would wrap up my takes with the... I like Shovel Knight better.
Yeah, me too.
All right.
I think it's fine at number 7. I haven't played Shadow of Colossus. I'm a big Resident Evil fan. I did enjoy GoldenEye, so I'm comfortable with Halo at 7.
So it's either going to go right now, correct me if I'm wrong, but where it sounds like it's going to go is either at number 8 or number 7 right now.
Yeah.
Does that sound like...
Yeah,
it sounds like it's going at number 7 right now. I keep hearing 7.
Yeah, 7.
So,
no.
I would personally like it at 7. I think that. Yeah. So, if we have 3 people that are putting it above Shovel Knight,
it sounds
then,
like we do.
Then I think we should put it at number
Chris
7.
Chris and I are the odd men out.
Boy, this ended up in a way that I didn't expect.
I can live with 7.
You know, it's funny. I came into this conversation, and this is a good reason why we have these discussions. I came into this conversation thinking this game was better than GoldenEye, and thinking I wanted to put it at number 3 above Legend of Zelda.
That's what I wanted to do.
But as we talked about it, I was thinking to myself, I'm like, if I go back and want to play this game and play the single player, I don't want to play this game. Yeah. I'd rather play GoldenEye.
I couldn't finish this.
I would like both of you to go back and replay GoldenEye campaign and report back on your experience.
I did on 9/11/2018, 2 years ago. So.
Wow, it's quite a date.
Yes, that was the date of the podcast release for GoldenEye. But I did that summer, so I mean, yeah, I don't know. So I think we have a new number 7 here. If everybody's in accord with that,
absolutely.
Yeah, I'm good with that.
So say we all.
Yeah, I can live with it.
All right, cool. And it brings me one step closer to pushing Final Fantasy IV out of the top 10.
Oh.
Brutal.
We all have our...
Just to make space for Chrono Trigger when that comes.
Oh, hell yeah. Chrono Trigger's going to go at number 1. Right, everybody?
I don't know. Is it better than GoldenEye?
I think it's very good, but we'll get there someday. But thank you all so much for coming on to our podcast. If you have lasted this far, dear listener, we have an offer for you. Because you've lasted this far into the episode, if you send us an email to itssobadpod@gmail.com or follow us on Twitter @itssobadpod and send me a direct message, you have the opportunity to win Secret of the Mana collection for the Switch. I have an extra one for some reason. Amazon has been so gracious to provide us with some the ability to send a game to a listener. So if you follow us at It's So Bad Pod, send us a direct message. We'll be in touch. We'll send you a collection of Mana, is what it's called, game for the Nintendo Switch.
DMs are open. Slide in.
Slide into our DMs. No dick pics. Well, no dick pics. Okay, cool. At It's So Bad Pod. But thank you, everybody. We have a new number 7, our 85th entry into the endless list. Halo Combat Evolved. Congratulations. And we'll be back next week. Thank you all.
Thanks, Mike.
Peace.